Eternal Dragon.
Welcome to Smoking Section, a podcast by Eternal Dragons, a digital archive that emulates nicotine-filled rave break conversations to reflect on Asian diasporic identity, culture, and the arts. I'm your host, Miles, aka DJ Oyasumi. Today we are very excited to be joined by Moon Girl. She is a DJ and producer based in New York that is a part of the Mischief Collective and DJs anything from house and techno to nightcore, DDR music, and hardstyle. In terms of production, she's been making DNB style tracks, which are really, really good, and you should definitely check them out. Hi.
Hi, thank you for having me on this podcast. I'm excited to chat about music, about my life, about the mix that I did for y'all. Yeah, everything.
So I was kind of thinking to start it off, maybe you could talk a little bit about where you grew up, your early memories of kind of like Asian diasporic or Asian American identity.
So I grew up in suburban New Jersey, central North Jersey, and grew up definitely in like a very white neighborhood. When my family moved to a different town for my high school, it only got worse or like more white, if that makes sense. I don't know. If I had to sum it up, like definitely traumatic and stifling. If you can imagine like entering a new high school, like right before leaving all your friends and like then just starting at a new place is always hard. I can definitely say that like I didn't really hit my groove of accepting my identity until like well into college. Mm. High school definitely set me back a good bit. I mean, Asian diaspora is a really big topic to try to tackle. And I guess you could say that I'm still like trying to figure out like exactly what my space that I take up like within that is. Whatever I choose to participate in that is like adjacent to either my culture or East Asian culture or Asian culture in general, I definitely do it like intentionally. If I do it now, like for example, like play DDR, listen to a lot of like DDR music or like watch anime or even like eat Asian food that I make myself. All of it is a conscious decision on my part, and it marks like a significant change from maybe like a time period in my life. Like for example, high school, where I might have like tried to distance myself from it or tried to downplay like my interest in it. Mostly because I first started watching anime and became like interested in also K-pop as well, like in middle school. And it was like at its peak, like maybe like eighth grade and ninth grade. And then I kind of stamped it out for the rest of high school because I realized that I wasn't going to like survive almost if I continued to be like out about it, however weird that sounds. But then I picked it up again, like halfway through college. Mm-hmm. And yeah, since then, like it has just it's been alive and kicking and strong.
What were like the first anime shows that you watched in like middle school?
It was Ouran High School Host Club. Definitely really formative for me. And then also like Shugo Kara. It's like a magical girl anime. And then I watched Death Note like pretty early on.
Classic.
Great show. Fruits Basket. Those are like the big ones that I remember from like my middle school years.
Do you remember the first moment when you were finding them and how what it activated for you, or like how you felt about it, and like why you were drawn to it?
Well, so I would say definitely the first anime I ever watched, which was also the most formative for me, was definitely Ouran High School Host Club. And I have posted about it like on my Instagram before, just how much it like means to me, specifically in the ways of providing a blueprint for my sexuality and gender expression at an age where like I was not going to figure any of that stuff out or have any sort of like inkling about those parts of myself until like years later. That was, it was almost, it felt almost like formative. I was going to say prophetic, but like probably formative is a better word for it. Yeah. 10 years down the line, like now I'm 24, like thinking about like this show that I watched when I was like 13. They were always like a form of it, of escapism for me, especially like when I was really young. And there's an appeal to slice of life anime and magical girl anime that like scratches an itch for me. Like obviously I was attracted to watching this sort of media like for a reason when I was in middle school, and it was inevitable sort of. So like if I didn't do it then, I would have found it in some form later in life, or it could have been sooner in life.
You talked about how there was kind of the lapse in high school, but then partway through college, you kind of fell back in love with anime, or maybe were just more comfortable engaging with it again. Did you go back to those first ones that you started with and like have a different understanding of it from like that vantage point in terms of you're talking about gender and sexuality?
I took a little break for a while because I was like, it's trying to like deny that part of myself, I guess. And then I fell back into it the summer before my junior year of college. And it was because I, out of nowhere, decided to start watching, I think, Attack on Titan.
Nice.
And then, yeah. And then I was like, okay, this is pretty fire. But then I was like, Attack on Titan's kind of like scary. So like, and also like my heart couldn't take random characters that I got attached to dying like randomly.
So it's, yeah.
Yeah. It's, I, my cortisol levels, I can't. Yeah. I can't take that sort of stress. So I stopped. So I like tapered off watching that. But then I picked up Haikyuu, you know, like the volleyball anime.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah. So I picked that up and that was nuts. It's also very close to my heart. I would say like Ouran High School Host Club and Haikyuu like share like top spot for anime that is like very close to my heart. That absolutely just ripped me to pieces, or not ripped me to pieces, but like it was like it immediately became like a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
And then that's the summer where I was like spending a lot of time by myself. I was actually like in the Bay Area living with my uncle. Was like really lonely for a summer, and so ended up watching anime again. And so that makes sense, right? Because like comfort blanket, safety, escapism sort of thing. So it was like a right time for me to get back into it. And so yeah, so I started watching it again. And definitely initially there's a lot of shame attached to it, where I was sort of like, I can't believe like I'm regressing. I remember thinking that. I was like, I can't believe I'm getting back into this, and felt like I was doing something shameful. Like definitely had a lot of shame around it. But I gradually worked through it. And I would say even now I'm still working through it, but I've come such a long way that like the way that I express myself now, a lot of times people don't really see any of the apprehension that I have surrounding like being outwardly like a weeb. People always think they're like, oh, like she is like so comfortable with it. That's actually not the case. Like I have some limits, but like I'm working through them. And I think one day, like my goal is like to get to a point where I'm totally, you know, in your face about it. No. Cause what I'll do right now is I'll be like, oh, sorry. Like I'm forcing us to listen to like the fucking, I don't know, like the soundtrack to K-On or something. Like, sorry, like here, does anyone else want aux? Like.
Yeah. Yeah, are your friends into it?
Into what, anime?
Yeah, when you have those moments of playing like soundtracks or anything.
Oh, they barely ever make it into the light of day. I have one friend, my friend Luna. We both like are very into like the same sort of pop culture, like fashion and also anime. She's like a photographer and she's like photographed and like done edits of my photos before and they've been really sick. I really value my friendship with her because she's one of like the few people in my life that I can talk to about like anime stuff. And like she's not as like into it as I am, but like my friends that are into it, like I really hold them close to my heart because like it's a level of connection that like you don't often find.
Yeah. So it's, I guess for you in a lot of cases, it's kind of like this more private part or like maybe like more solitary activity, but you do have like a few friends that like you're able to connect with it on.
I like only really ever feel comfortable watching anime like by myself if it's like the first time I'm watching something.
Yeah.
I prefer to watch it by myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, like obviously discourse is really important. I don't really ever tell anybody that I like watched Beastars, but like I did find people to talk about it with nice. Like in real life, which was really nice. Stuff like that, you know, like it's like residual shame and like shame is always hard to work through, but
totally.
We're getting there.
Yeah. You were saying it was kind of in college that you had a chance to reengage with thinking about your identity. What was the impetus for that and what allowed you to feel comfortable like engaging with that? Was it friends or was it classes or student orgs or anything?
When I went to Yale for college, I was like, maybe I'll finally find people here that are cool, open-minded, and like we'll vibe together and it'll be great. And like everybody will be so open-minded and accepting. It's going to be nothing like high school was. Mm. And I showed up and honestly, like it was like a slap in the face when I got there because it was not like that. I mean, there are cool people there, but like that institution is still controlled heavily by like pretty much like white supremacy. Like there's no other way to describe it. Like hierarchies, like social hierarchies, but also institutional hierarchies, academic hierarchies. Everything has to be sorted into some sort of ranking system, even though it's not like necessarily explicit. Mm. And the people at the top are usually like the white people with a lot of money.
Yeah.
I have a couple defining moments. The first one was like, I'd studied French for like 7 years. I started like all the way back in middle school and I studied all throughout high school. And I placed into like a really high level French class for a conversation my freshman year. And so I took the class and then over the summer I decided, okay, why don't I like cap it all off with like a language trip to France or to Paris specifically. Mm-hmm. And I went on this trip and it was like the worst trip I've ever been on in my life. Oh, like, no. Yeah. Like it was a combination of the people that were on the trip.
Was it Yale people?
Yeah. 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 It was a Yale program and it was like 5 weeks in Paris and classes every other day during the day and then excursions and field trips and stuff like that. And two things killed my vibe. The first thing was the people that went on the trip. It was the first time I ever truly experienced like being overlooked completely. There were some people on that trip, for example, like Jennifer Connelly's son, who was my year, who went to Yale. Yeah, like was on that trip. And like, he was like the star of this show, which was like 20 kids on this trip. And like, everybody was like, oh my God, let's go here. Let's go there with him. Wherever, whatever he wants to do, we'll do it. And then there's other people that wouldn't even look at me because they were too busy trying to talk to him and like would actively like make an effort to not interact with me or any of the other East Asians on that trip. Genuinely, like there was like four of us total and it was like a market, like I felt something very tangible where it was like we don't want to associate specifically with the Asians on this trip. And that really bothered me. And after that, I was like, also, like, the other thing was that Paris sucks. Yeah. Like, I hate that city. You could not pay me to go back to that city. Like, the amount of sexual harassment, I got harassed more times in my life in that city than I have, like, in my life. And in, like, very serious ways, too. Like, usually it's, like, verbal. No, like, I was, like, physically harassed there twice. And also, they don't, like, speak to you in French if they can tell that you're not like a native speaker of French.
Yeah.
So I was like, fuck this city, fuck these people. Like, I came back, I was like, had such a sour taste in my mouth. Yeah, so that was the one defining moment. And then the second defining moment was my sophomore year when I was like, okay, maybe I should join some more clubs. I applied to like a wide variety of like stuff around campus. Mm-hmm. And the thing about extracurriculars at Yale is that they require like application processes and interviews for pretty much everything that you could ever want to do like on a college campus.
Yikes.
We were being interviewed by like fellow students. So like everything has an application process. Like it's not enough that like you apply to the school and you got in. Like you have to prove yourself now to other students, which makes like total sense. Right? Like I love that. We love needing to grovel at the feet of seniors in order to like be a part of like the fucking, I don't know, storytelling club, like straight up. Like that's one of the ones I was rejected from. Sucks. And I'm pretty yeah. And I was at that interview and I was like, bro, like why, like this isn't even an interview. You're just asking me about my like what I do for fun and like what I listen to, what music I listen to.
How
and
could you
that's
get rejected?
What you're basing this. I know. And then they rejected me. And so that's why it hurt so much more. So yeah. Basically what happened was like my sophomore year, I got rejected from like everything that I applied to. Everything.
Damn.
Everything. Absolutely everything. It hurt a lot, right? Obviously. The one thing that I managed to get into was the radio station, which happened to be the one thing that like didn't require an application for. Anybody could join the school radio station, WYBCX. And that is also how I ended up starting to DJ.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So that's like, that was my origin story, my villain origin story or my hero or whatever you want. Yeah.
You decide.
Yeah, you decide. Exactly. And after I stopped taking French, I decided to take a semester of Chinese for Heritage Speakers my junior year of college, which was really fun. And then that prompted me to want to take a year of Japanese my senior year. So I started level one Japanese and took level one and level two for my entire senior year. What caused me to want to reconnect with my culture was, number one, total disillusionment of white culture, of Yale, of white countries like France. Because I was disillusioned, just totally disavowing it, I was like, there's no way I'm going to pander to anything where I remotely even feel like there's like any sort of white supremacy here. Or not like white supremacy, but like where like the vibe is like the white people are like the biggest ones in the room. I was like, absolutely not. Yeah. Like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And you know what? I'm to prove that point to myself, I'm going to take Chinese for Heritage Speakers and Japanese. Mm-hmm. That was my thought process. I was like, I refuse to like take this French language for 7 years and like have them spit in my face when I try to speak it to them. I was like, fuck you guys. Like,
yeah, Paris be like that.
Yeah, no, actually.
Did you have like Asian friends at Yale?
Actually, so my high school, there was like a not a significant population of Asian people, but like there was enough that there was like an Asian circle. But even within it, it was a competition to see who could be most white adjacent, even though all of the Asians were friends with each other. And it was like a very insular group and they were very like tight knit and like almost cult like. But like, of course, like wanting to be white, like permeates every aspect of when you're growing up, like non-white in America.
Yeah.
So I guess I had Asian friends, but it wasn't like a safe space by any means. Mm-hmm. And in college, I did also have Asian friends. My roommate was Pakistani, but like it was definitely more of like a varied group. And I also distinctly remember going into college and like thinking to myself, like, I can't only have Asian friends. Like, I don't want to do what happened in high school, but also I recognized, like, in my head, I was like, there's a stigma against, like, specifically East Asian people that are only friends with other East Asian people. Yeah. And I was like, I want to avoid that, but also, like, I do want to meet, like, new people of, like, different backgrounds. So it was twofold, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like it's such a dance, like, thinking about identity growing up in America, that there's, like, all these things that you're thinking about that's influencing, like, how you're trying to navigate even just, like, your friendships.
Yeah,
it's very taxing. I did college radio too, so I'm curious, what's Yale's college radio? Did you do it through senior year?
I did it for, actually, I did one semester of a show and then took a break for a bit, and then I came back and I did another show the last semester of my senior year.
What was it like?
It was fun. So the last show I did was with the other two, or some of the other Mischief members, and that was really cool to have a radio show with them. The first one that I did, though, was because I didn't have any friends that joined with me. The way it worked is that, like, if you wanted a show, you had to pair up with somebody if you had never run a show before.
Oh.
Yeah. So, and I didn't know anybody. So I asked this girl who also, like, she was a year younger and also didn't have anyone to run a show with. And we were like, we can do one together because I guess, like, we have to, but also, like, we were like, this will be interesting because what we realized is she only listens to country music. Oh, and that is the only genre of music that I will not touch with a 10-foot pole. And so we named our show Dubstep and Pickup Trucks. And the theme of the show was that we would alternate playing songs. And after each song, we would try to convince each other of, like, why it was a good song and, like, why.
I love that.
Yeah. Like, but we, like, didn't like each other's music.
Did you ever, like, get convinced?
There were some, like, tolerable ones, but I think, like, what I just, like, I have absolutely no form of connection at all to country music. Like, nothing about it, like, stirs anything up in me. I don't feel the emotion that, like, I'm assuming you're supposed to feel when people listen to country music. I don't have a concept of, like, Americana or, like, of that life either. And so a lot of the identity part is, like, lost on me. And so if I have nothing, it doesn't resonate with me at all.
Were you guys, like, mixing?
Oh, no, not on radio. The radio, we would just play tracks and, like, maybe talk about it, shoot the shit. I had no intention. I didn't join the radio station thinking that I was going to have an opportunity to be like a full, like, event DJ. But what happened was, like, the spring of my sophomore year, this local restaurant, actually, do you know of it? It's called Junzi. So it's, like, this Chipotle, like, fast casual style restaurant that specifically specializes in Northern Chinese bings. They market them like burritos, but they have the wheat pancake exterior and, like, a bunch of Northern Chinese dishes, side dishes as the fillings. And they also do noodles. And there was a location in New Haven, and they emailed the radio station asking for a DJ for one of their late night lunches. I saw the email go out to, like, the entire panelist, and I was like, dang, like, I really want to do this. Like, this sounds so fun, but, like, I don't know how to DJ. And I waited, and I saw this guy, like, reply back to the email being like, yo, like, I'm down, like, I'll do it. And then I immediately emailed him, and I was like, hey, like, can I shadow you? Like, I really want to learn how, but, like, I don't know how. And he was so nice, and he was like, yeah, of course. And I met him that night. I just watched him DJ, and it was really fun. He actually offered, he's such a good guy. He, like, offered to give me, like, a proper lesson. So later that week, maybe I, like, went over to his place and he sat me down and, like, showed me, like, what all the knobs do, how it connects to the speakers, how the controller works. And then he sent me a bootleg copy of Traktor Pro, which is what I actually still use to DJ when I have to bring my own equipment. I'm using, like, a cracked version of a bootleg version of Traktor. His house, like, was, like, the first party that I ever DJed, you know, random, like, off-campus, like, house. You can imagine the vibes, like, the floor is, like, about a cave-in type shit. Like,
I know the vibes.
Yeah, and I still have the track list that I made for it. I like wrote it all down, I remember, and I like have it somewhere around here. And I bought my own controller like soon after like the lesson that I got from Jared. Then went home for the summer. And then at the beginning of my junior year, I was DM'd on Facebook by Edwina, who is now my friend. But at the time, I didn't know them. And they asked like if I wanted to join like, a DJ group. They were like, I've heard from Jared that you're DJing. And I wanted to ask if you would be interested in joining, like we're forming like a collective of all women or non-binary POC DJs. And I was like, hell yeah, of course I would want to do something like that. So joined up with them, and then we started doing like small events, like we would do like school events or like local events in New Haven. And then slowly through like some connections that some of the people in the group had, specifically like Kafila and Raquel, who like grew up in New York, we started managing to get weekday gigs at some clubs in New York. And that was really fun. There was like a period of time where like I would be taking the Metro North, which is like a 2-hour train ride from New Haven to Grand Central in New York, and then taking the subway all the way to Bushwick, playing like at this club at like 2 a.m, and then needing to go home that night, that same night, and getting home like around 6 or 7. Like it was, yeah, it was like pretty, I was just doing it because I was like, there's no way I'm going to miss DJing in New York, you know, like I have to do it. We went on a little bit of a hiatus as like some people were not like located in New York for a little bit. Like we all graduated sort of around the same time, except Edwina is like a med school student now. They're like a couple years ahead. And so we took a hiatus, and then we also stopped because of COVID, obviously.
Yeah.
That now I've fast forwarded to like after I graduated. I made a new group of friends in New York in a different scene, sort of like not as much doing like house and techno, but like doing more of like the DIY music and like nightcore stuff that I knew I was also into, but had never found a chance to like play out yet. Now that COVID is over, we are like sort of back in full force, honestly, is what it feels like. Lots of requests for bookings. And at the same time, like, it's also very important to me that like I've also been able to like stake my own name, if that makes sense, and not have to necessarily rely on the group as much, because there was definitely like a level of insecurity about that at the beginning. It was like, I don't know if I like really bring anything to the table. Like I don't have the connections. I'm just like out here like trying to play music, if you'll let me, basically, is like was my vibe. As I've gotten more comfortable with myself, the music I like, really like leaning on it, leaning into it, being like, you know what, like I'll find a space for me to be able to play DDR music, hardstyle, nightcore, even if it isn't like always the right time, I'll find a space to play it. And that has been an important part of my career development, I think.
I'm curious, like over this trajectory, what kind of tracks you played, like the first sets you did, and like maybe how that changed over time. Because I know for me, like, I feel like I've kind of gone through different genres. And honestly, it's just like been just slowly progressing up in BPMs. But
yeah,
I do feel like some music speaks to me, and then like I find something else, and then that speaks to me. I'm curious if like that's similar for you, or if you kind of had like two things always at the same time, but you just didn't have the opportunity for like the other thing.
That is actually something that I currently still struggle with, but like it was much worse towards like the beginning of my career, like maybe my senior year-ish, and like moving here and stuff like that. I would say that like the introspection of quarantine, while it was like, I was definitely depressed for a large part of it, but it also sort of like cemented that like when I came back, like I needed to commit to like doing what I wanted, and I couldn't be like compromising like any part of me for fear that like, I don't know, that would be weird or like people would hate it and stuff like that. Like any fear that I had, I had to put that, I realized I had to put that away, because I was like, yo, like everything that I love and that I'm leaning on for comfort in quarantine, like I'm so inspired by it and I need to show that, you know. But to go back to your question, I think like starting out, like there was definitely like, I was just confused, because I was like, I see that there's already an established scene for house and techno in New York. And I love house and techno, but I also love many other things. And when I was first starting out and like collecting tracks that I wanted to play and that I really liked, mm-hmm. I was like, how do I make any sense of like this like mishmash of like,
yeah,
you know, like some of them were like borderline like EDM tracks. Some of them were already hard style, right? Like I have like garage, like UK garage and like nightcore, like sped up tunes and like some, like, so, like some early beginnings of like hyper pop when I was around the time, like sitting in my SoundCloud. And then, yeah, and like anime soundtracks. And I was like, how am I going to make any sense of this? You know, yeah. Like nobody, like at that time, I was like, the gigs that I am managing to be able to play a slot at, like nobody wants to fucking hear like Cyberbird, Yoko Kanno, Cyberbird. Like I was like, I can't play this shit like out. I would just like save them for later. Like I would download them, but I was like, I don't know if this is going to see the light of day anytime soon.
Yeah.
But like a big fear of mine was like, I want to do more. I want to do a bigger variety of stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know if what I need to do in order to succeed is to put that away and just do the house and techno. But it's a good thing I didn't. And I don't think I would be physically possible of keeping that away because it just comes out of me one way or another. Like I'm just gonna have to do it. And I'd say that I'm lucky that like I found the right group of people and specifically also like the right venues and the right audiences definitely also that are open to hearing stuff like that.
Yeah, I was curious because I know how much of a presence like house and techno has in New York, if there is space for like other stuff. How did you find those spaces and those people and like where are they?
At the very end of my senior year, I was going out a lot like in New York, like two house and techno venues, like Nowadays, elsewhere, Boston Nova Civic Club, Mood Ring. And I would go with these two really good friends of mine that were dating at the time. Around that time, I also had my first Molly experience at Nowadays, actually. I was like 21 at the time. And that was like pretty much the night that I also figured out that I was not straight. I think now the proper term that I would use for myself is like pansexual, but labels are like always a confusing thing for anybody to work out. And so, yeah, that was a very formative night for me.
Who'd you see for that at that show?
Who'd I see? Underground Resistance. It was Underground Resistance.
Oh shit. Nice.
Yeah. It was an absolutely epic night. And you know what? Don't know if it had to do with the drugs, but like I could honestly say to the best of my ability that like the music was incredible. Like it was absolutely incredible. We stayed like until they closed at like 9 pretty much. Like it was like full daylight by the time we left. Yeah. Around that time also, I was in this like Facebook group called Patrician Music Chart Posting, which was like this like sort of edgy, like a lot of edgelords in there talking about like death grips and like rank my music taste, like rank my chart. I'm trying to think what other like artists. I don't even listen to any of these artists, like Death Grips, Merzbo, like you know all of like the 4chan like Mew. I almost called it a subreddit, but it's not that. It's like a channel or whatever, thread or whatever. Yeah, like, so really that type of vibe. And I was put in that group by an old friend, just was in it for like shits and giggles. And one day I saw someone made it like a Facebook thread in that group. He was like, any like really good like UK garage recommendations? And I was like, obviously, I was like, oh, finally, like a genre of music that I'm like actually really into. So I was like scrolling through the thread and I put some of my own recommendations in. And then I saw there was a couple comments by someone named Neil And I was like, these are really good recs. Like, cause I was like, I know like two out of three of these songs and they're like in my tops for like UK garage tracks. And so I had commented back and I was like, hey, yo, like your recs are sick. And then we added each other and then we started talking. And at the time, so Neil, who goes by NG now, she is my friend who is a trans woman and she's half Chinese, half white, I believe. And she's she grew up in London. And so we became friends like from this thread in this like random music group. And we started talking a lot. We got along really well. Like we chatted a lot. And then she was like, I'm actually studying abroad for a semester. And then she finished her semester and she was like, yo, like I'm going back to London now, but I have a layover in New York for like literally one night. And I was like, come through, like you stay on my couch, like just roll, like we're friends, you know, like even though like we've never met, like you're chill. I like you. Like let's hang out.
Yeah.
And so she comes, we have dinner and then we're like, let's go out. And so we go out with the two friends that I've been going out with for most of that year. At that time, we ended up at, I think, 444 Club, which is now closed. Now it's Heaven in Las Vegas. But at the time, it was 444 Club. Yeah. And we were there and we were having a really good time. My friend and she was like, oh, we should like, I have a friend who's like working the floor at Market Hotel, which is like another venue in Bushwick. And she was like, I need to go see him. Like, we have to go. We should go check it out. And I was like, we were like, meh, like, do we want to go all the way there, like, and pay, like, door tickets to get in and whatever. But then we ended up saying, like, why not? And we went. And I met Zach. Zach is also my friend now, and he is very into the visual K scene. But he has participated and, like, visited Japan, like, to see the visual K scene there. I met him that night. And then through him, later that summer, we like talked for a little bit and like we realized we had a lot of the same interests in like Visual K. I'm really into Visual K music and also like video games. And so we would talk a lot about that stuff. And then he was like, yo, you should come to like my friend's homecoming party on Labor Day. This is like Labor Day of 2019. And I was like, it says on the flyer, like to bring White Claw. Like I'll just bring some White Claw. And I show up and I know nobody in this room. I don't think Zach is even there yet.
Where
I know
was this again?
Like somebody's like apartment. It was she's my friend now, but it was just like at the time I was showing up to like a random apartment by myself with a case of White Claw. And I walk in there and everybody like is like, "Hi, like what's up? Like what's your name?" And I'm like, "Hi, like I'm Elaine." Like total 180 from like the type of introduction/like welcome that I would get. Or just like the vibe even from like parties at Yale. Like it was like parties at Yale were so closed off. Like nobody wanted to give you time of day. Definitely nobody would say hi to you when you walk into like a room. The moment I walked into this room, like everybody was like, hi, like how are you doing? And then I became friends with pretty much all of them. Like I think everybody that was in that room, in that party, that apartment, I'm good friends with like to this day. And that is the group of people that I started doing DJ shows for. Like that group of people was like a group of like, they were like, some of them were art students in New York, like at Pratt. Some of them were just like transplants like into Brooklyn, but they all like knew each other from like either the party scene, like the more DIY party scene. I would say like in terms like going all the way back to like one of your earlier questions, like the venues that are more DIY in Bushwick are definitely like, I would say Hollow. Like I'm playing at Hollow on Thursday with like some of the people like in this group. And also like I've heard Trans Picos is like more DIY. Like all these are like further out into Bushwick. I don't know, the internet connection through social media, I actually have to credit it for a lot of the connections that I've made that are really important to me, like today, for sure.
So many of the people that I've become friends with on the internet, like I still haven't met in person, but it seems really cool that you've been able to meet one person on the internet and then it leads to like meeting a bunch of other people like in person. Are all these people in New York?
Technically, we met like over the internet. So yes. Yeah, so I like that needs like an honorary mention in this podcast, but yes. All these people are in New York still. Yeah.
I'm curious, like the difference between doing like mixes for online and DJing live and like the pros and cons for like each and like how you feel about them in conjunction to each other.
I started producing over quarantine and It was long overdue, I would say. I think I had been meaning to get into it and like to start using Ableton in earnest way back. Like even when I first started DJing, I was like thinking about it. And in college, like in order to try to jumpstart it, I took like a class on music production that like Yale somehow like offered. Yeah, I think it gave me like a good foundation. But what was missing from me was like, not missing maybe, like I had this like, I still do, like a strong fear of failure and of disappointing myself and of not meeting, I think, my own standards, my own extremely high standards that I have of myself. And I think this is a very common thing among children of Asian immigrants. It honestly felt like a plague to me. And it was what was like stopping me from like trying for the longest time. Inside of me, I was like, I can do this, but I have to start doing it. Like I have to start doing it. And I couldn't find time. I was also working full time. Like I work at an ad tech company that was like my 9-to-5, and that wasn't also helping my situation at all in terms of like finding the time to do it. And then quarantine hit and I came to an impasse where I was like, well, you've been saying like that you don't have the time. Like now you have a ton of time. What are you going to do about it? I don't know if it was because I was depressed or if it was in spite of the depression, but there came a moment where I was like, I have to like make something. Like it was almost like a desperation. And that feeling of desperation has sort of stayed with me. Like even now, like in times when I feel not great, the desire to make something is a consistent factor in my life where it's almost like if I'm really having a rough day, I feel like that desperation again where I'm like, I need to make something because it almost feels like a like hunger, like I need to do it or else I will die or something. That's how I started producing. And like I made like a small track and then I made like a remix of a trance song that ended up doing like, that's the song that I have like the most plays on SoundCloud. In August of 2020, I moved back to New York from New Jersey, which was like the best decision I could have made for myself in terms of like my mental health. And I continued to make music throughout like the winter. Since I made that track, that first track in over quarantine, I realized like, okay, like if I can make a simple track, like I could also definitely make some mixes like in Ableton. For like the quarantine mix series that I was invited to do, I did all of them in Ableton. And so like making the mix in Ableton, like you don't do anything live. You're just like sort of like moving the songs around, putting them together, adding some effects, adding some flourishes and doing it that way. And I realized that it allowed me like so much more control over the final product than doing a live mix would. With my perfectionist streak, especially if the mix is like intended to be consumed like from the get-go and solely online, like on SoundCloud or something, I was like, it's going to pain me to have to hear small mistakes if I were to record it live. It's a slightly different story if I was like playing the mix in a live context and then it was recorded and put online. Like that's different. But I was like, okay, like I definitely prefer the added control and the added ability to like do more by making like an online or Ableton mix. You can't do everything in Ableton, right? Like obviously live mixing is still important for the like live situations, but it gives me more room to do a lot more stuff. Like I made a mix recently for Jerome, actually. You know Jerome? Jerome Worldwide? Yeah. In the making of that mix, I realized I was like, okay, I'm just gonna like export like this little bit, two or three songs. If I'm doing a mix that's like for online purposes, number one, I don't have to worry about people fucking with the song. I can just literally put in whatever the fuck I want. So what ends up happening is like I put in like all the songs that like I really like that like don't make the cut for in person. I mean like live events. And that could be for a variety of reasons. Some of which like including like maybe the song is really short or it's like difficult to mix, for example, mix live. And so those songs are always great to put in like an Ableton mix. You don't have to worry about like the, I don't know, short intro or like the weird ending. You just like cut that shit out and mix it in at a different time. I recently just exported like a little bit of the mix because I was like, I could just save this as a file. And then I have like these three songs like pre-mixed together already and I could just play it as smart. One song. Smart. Yeah.
Dang.
So I'm about to drop one of those shits nice. on Thursday, like a premixed edit of like three songs together.
That's super smart.
Yeah.
I love that. Wow, hacks.
Hashtag life hack.
You heard it here first.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a really good segue to get to talk about the mix you did for Eternal Dragons, the process that went into it, how you chose the tracks, how you mixed it. It's like so clean and all the effects are like, just make it so much more hype. The thing I love about it too is how there's a lot of like jumps in BPM, but it'll be as if you're like playing DDR and you just like leveled up to the next level. And then I notice like that's when like the BPM shifts. I feel like also too, like the arcade is like such a specific space. And I was wondering if like memories of the arcade, like maybe influenced like making the mix at all.
Yeah, I'm like looking at my track list just to remind myself what shit I put in this one. But yeah, this is these are like a lot of my favorite either like hard style like anime remixes or like DDR songs. I think for that mix in particular, I believe I used like a sample pack from this rhythm game I play on my phone called Arkea, and those were really fun to incorporate. What happened was that in January of 2019. Is when I went to like the Chinatown Family Fair arcade for the first time. Once I played DDR and like the other rhythm games that they have available for the first time, I was like instantly hooked and I wanted to go like back like constantly. But then coronavirus hit and then I didn't go for all of quarantine. The first time I went back after quarantine was 3 months ago. I had been playing like Arkea and other rhythm games like on my phone throughout all of quarantine. Also, it was like a very like comforting thing for me to play these games. And I got pretty good at them on my phone at least. And then I was like, okay, like I want to play DDR again though. Like it's probably going to be different, like using your feet or whatever and like different controls. Also, Sound Vortex is the other game that I'm like really, really into at the arcade. And also Pump It Up. I went back and holy shit, like I got much better. Like it, nice. Like the improvement in Arkea, like, and in like phone games, like for some reason it translated into improvement, immediate, like direct improvement in DDR. Like I was suddenly able to like play the hard level. Like when I was playing it like pre-quarantine, that was nuts. I was like, holy shit, like I have to keep doing this. Yeah, I have to keep practicing and getting better. But also, like, even from the beginning, I was like, I fuck with the music so hard on DDR, on Sound Vortex especially. And Arkea has, like, a great selection of songs as well. And I was like, I love these songs. Like, I need to play them. I need to DJ them. I need to find a place that would be okay for me to DJ them. And honestly, like, in the current state of, like, my live DJ bookings, I might throw in a couple here and there at, like, Hollow or at, like, my friend's birthday party at Purgatory. But, like, I don't exclusively do DDR music live because, of course, like, not everybody is interested in DDR, nor are they is everybody, like, interested in, like, DDR music. So I tried to, like, keep it tasteful. But, again, in online mixes, I go all out. I have too many fun songs to not go all out in online mixes. I think this mix especially, I was really excited to bring out some stuff that I had found on like YouTube and SoundCloud, like the Ryuichi Sakamoto remix of Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence is like a treasure of mine. But also like some of like the neuro funk, which is like a harder version of like drum and bass with like more complex rhythms, like really happy to bring those in. Like that type of song, that genre is like frequently featured in like rhythm games, especially the more recent rhythm games. Also a little Nightcore in there, like lots of good like selection. Current Value, huge fan of Current Value. Like I think his mastery of like rhythms, like percussive rhythms, and like the way that digital sounds can be manipulated to sound rhythmic is like super masterful. I'm surprised that like none of his songs have been like included in any rhythm games that I've seen so far, because I'm like, this shit is like, this would smack so hard in Sound Voltex or like Archaea or something.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. It's probably because he's like a white, I think he's from like Irish or German or something. Like he's like a very, very in that European scene, but like his music is great.
Just kind of slept on, or
he's definitely not slept on. Okay, it's just that like his sphere of influence does not, it has no overlaps with like the rhythm game community is the thing, which I'm just surprised that it doesn't. But like, for example, I found out about Current Value from when Porter Robinson, which who I used to be a massive fan of, his like alter ego project Virtual Self, like I attended like the first concert ever that he had under that moniker way back in 2017, which was like when I was in college, and he put a bunch of like Current Value songs like in his set, and I really fucked with them like live. But then I didn't really get into like his music specifically until my resurgence of like interest in rhythm games, and then like I found a lot of his remixes and I was like, this slaps.
What stuff do you have on the horizon? You said you have some shows. Are you still making like tracks and stuff?
It's always a struggle for me to like find the time to sit down and like properly focus on making a track. But like I have some friends in a band called Mother Cell that I've DJed alongside. And they asked me to do a remix of one of their songs off their new album. My intention is to make it like a really fat, hard style track, a really like rowdy, loud hard style track. So that's the next like production thing that I'm working on. But God knows when I'm going to get to that.
Thanks so much for your time and talking about your experiences and music and the mix.
Thank you for having me. This was really fun to go back through memory lane like this.
Yeah, definitely. Reflecting on a lot.
You can find Moon Girl on SoundCloud at moong-rl and on Instagram at juicylilmoon. You can find Eternal Dragons on Bandcamp, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Twitter at Eternal Dragons. Thanks for listening.
Eternal Dragons.